This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Unless you've taken up residence under that proverbial rock, you've heard that the rights of transgender students have become a huge topic of discussion and controversy over the past couple of months.
I was, like, really curious as to, like, how that all works with being transgender.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear about a school in Western New York where the students produced a tribute to a transgender classmate. Then it's off to the West Coast, where a Bay Area high school is making history with a groundbreaking LGBT course. We'll also hear about a college in Vermont that's calling it quits and spend an academic minute learning about teamwork. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Over the last couple of years, the Cheektowaga Central High School has participated in PBS NewsHour student reporting labs. Cheektowaga is a nearby suburb of Buffalo, New York. As radio station WBFO's Focus on Education reporter Eileen Buckley discovered, this year the students produced a story about a transgender high school student.
I was, like, really curious as to, like, how that all works with being transgender.
Tatiana Moses is a senior. She was one of the four student producers who created a video of their classmate DJ Morley, once a boy known as Dalton. Morley is finishing up her second year at the high school. She identifies herself as transgender.
I realized I was transgender when I was younger, around the age of like 5, but I never really knew what it was called.
That's Morley speaking in the student-produced video. The day we visited the high school to meet with her and classmates, Morley called in sick. However, students gave us permission to access their video work for her story.
You know that you're like, okay, I want to be a female, but at the time I didn't know, like, that was called trans.
Students in this project learned about Morley's confidence and how it has strengthened her to live as a teenage girl. Deja Vu Romer is also a Cheektowaga High School senior.
At first it was kind of like shocking, but then when I thought about it, I'm like, I mean, everything's changing now in society. Like, it's not that big of a shock to me. She changes in a girl's locker room, but it doesn't bother me. Like, I see her as a female, not as a male.
I had a doctor, Dr. Mazur, who basically sat me down, and I didn't know what trans was at the time. I didn't know the meaning of it or trans was a thing. So when we talked about it and we discussed, you know, my feelings and how I thought and the way I saw the world and how I saw myself when I was older, he basically looked at me and said, you know, you're transgender, this is like your title.
The students told WBFO News there seems to be much attention surrounding the transgender issue, so they wanted to focus on the topic. Senior Validia Jones was excited to work on the project because she knew nothing about Morley.
I got to see, like, what she goes through and everything. And
what does she go through?
Like, she gets a lot of bad feedback and she gets a lot of good, and then, like, with her families, they were supportive and everything.
Senior Kenitra Redfern says they visited Morley's house and met with her parents to learn about the transgender youth and her life.
What did you learn?
I learned that even though they're, like, transgender, like, they're still people too. Like, they still have feelings.
When DJ came out and said that she was transgender, obviously we asked her, are you sure, or is this something that you're thinking about? Mm-hmm. Are you sure this is something that you want?
My childhood was normal.
I think her parents see her as a strong individual. Like they don't have a son, but they have a strong, beautiful daughter, so.
I feel like it was a lot easier for them because, like she said, she had older brothers who grew up gay as well. So, like, it wasn't just her.
I actually seen her transformation. She came from, like, her freshman year. Everybody was just like, oh, well, you know, that's a boy. She's just gay. That's all they just said, oh, yeah, you're gay and stuff like that. And then, like, as the year went on, she started wearing heels. And I'm like, well, people saying she's gay, but she's starting to look like a female to me, so. And then this year it was like, bam, I'm transgender, call me DJ.
I showed up with my hair curled, my makeup fully done, all girl clothes. And I did not look like myself. And I was scared, but my mom looked at me and said, you know, if you're happy, you're happy. If they don't like it, put on a smile and walk sassily away in your heels.
I was initially nervous when they chose this topic because it has been so, I mean, at that point in time, it was just coming out as a big issue in a lot of communities that were close to us.
Cheektowaga High School teacher Joe Malley leads the Student Reporter Project.
I don't think it really helps kids look into questions that everybody knows the answers of already. I mean, here's this issue, and our entire society is coming to terms with it, and here are four extremely bright adolescents, really digging into this very interesting and complicated topic and doing it with grace and respect and dignity. It's been great to watch.
The four student producers say they've actually gained a new girlfriend through this project. They bonded with Morley.
I feel like we helped her and she helped us in a way. And like we kind of like helped society figure things out as well.
The students say a lesson learned is not to judge someone.
And Eileen Buckley filed that report from station WBFO in Buffalo, New York. Burlington College, a small college in Burlington, Vermont, has closed its doors for good. The college's Board of Trustees voted to end all academic programs and close the college effective May 27th. The announcement comes after the school struggled for years to repay debt incurred after it bought land, lost its line of credit, and faced losing accreditation. The best of our knowledge is Pat Bradley reports.
Burlington College was founded in 1972 as an alternative to standardized academia. Focused on experiential learning, it has been recognized for its high level of internships and individualized learning. President Carol Moore and Dean of Operations and Advancement Cora Lee Holm explained that they faced not only insurmountable debt, but a loss of accreditation from the New England Association of Schools and Colleges. Holm says it is being pulled as of January 2017.
In summer of 2014, the administration went in front of NEASC and gave the information about why we should not be placed on probation, and they were looking solely at finances. The commission at the time said we did not meet the standard, put us on probation for 2 years. Since then, we have worked hard to decrease the amount of debt. It was over $11 million. We now owe about $2.2 million. They have decided to lift our accreditation based on the financial standard.
The college's lender also informed it that its line of credit would not be renewed. The credit is crucial to maintain cash flow between semesters. Vermont Digger reporter Elizabeth Hewitt says the college has struggled with enrollment over the past few years.
That has been a challenge for them in terms of keeping money coming in. So they were finding that they were having money come in at the beginning of the semester, but were really struggling financially in the off seasons, in the in-between. And so they were relying on a line of credit. And that line of credit ultimately was pulled by People's Bank last month. And in light of that, the board decided that they didn't have the financial security to carry on.
Burlington College's fiscal problems can be tracked to a land purchase made in 2011. In an effort to boost enrollment and expand the college, then-President Jane Sanders, wife of then-Congressman and now presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, championed acquisition of 32 acres of land from the Diocese of Burlington. Vermont Digger Burlington reporter Morgan True calls the $10 million purchase the catalyst for all the problems the college has since encountered.
The home was originally secured using pledged donations. So Jane Sanders, as president, told People's United Bank that the college had $2.6 million in pledged donations. The college, however, received only $676,000 in actual donations from 2010 to 2014, according to figures provided by the college. That's far less than the $5 million Sanders listed as likely pledges and less than a third of the $2.14 million Sanders had promised the bank that the college would collect in cash during a four-year period.
University of Vermont Professor of Economics Art Wolf believes saving Burlington College was virtually impossible because its fiscal health had been tenuous, regardless of the property purchase.
The purchase probably shouldn't have been done. Kind of in hindsight, Jane Sanders should have recognized that the resources of the college really couldn't support that kind of major debt But you know, small colleges in the United States have a real hard time anyway. And Burlington College is a very tiny college. We've seen other colleges in the Burlington area go out of business. Trinity College in Burlington went out of business about, well, maybe 20 years ago. That was larger than Burlington College. And there's colleges all over the country that are encountering very significant financial problems, and this is just another one of those cases.
The 70 undergraduates remaining at Burlington College will be able to transfer to other Vermont colleges. Audio from the Burlington College press conference is courtesy of Vermont Digger. Reporting for The Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Pat Bradley.
Still to come, a high school in the Bay Area has made history with its new LGBT curriculum. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. This year, students at San Francisco Unified School District School of the Arts walked into a brand new kind of class, the district's first ever LGBTQ studies class for high school students. For the program Cross Currents, Lizak Shallet reports on this historic addition to the school's curriculum.
Meet Lindsay Schlacks, the teacher in room 204 at San Francisco's School of the Arts.
We're going to start talking about trans, not just transgender, but the big umbrella.
For the past 8 years, Ms. Schlacks has started the school day talking to her students about economics and U.S. government. This year, she's focusing on something different, the big umbrella of lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, and queer, or LGBTQ, studies. She's teaching one of the nation's first, if not the only, high school classes on the subject.
It's history, and it's politics and government, and it's media awareness, and it's literature, and it's film. And so it's very, very, very interdisciplinary. There's a ton of art in here, a ton of poetry.
And a ton of videos, songs, films, podcasts, and TV shows, like Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
This has clearly been a big week for the LGBT community, but it's also been a big year for the T part of that equation.
So we use I use as much technology as I can to keep it relevant and interesting and engaging. We can watch old news reports. We can watch documentaries. There isn't yet a textbook for high school students about LGBTQ studies. So instead, they listen to all of these stories.
Schlacks actually crowdfunded for MP3 players this summer to make sure all her students could do the coursework. Things like watching this YouTube video of transgender activist Laverne Cox.
I'm an actress. I'm a producer. I'm a writer. I'm a daughter. I'm a sister. And I'm a transgender woman.
So you've probably heard of Laverne Cox at this point. She is one of the most vocal and the most visual trans activists out there.
Schlack says the class came about because the San Francisco School Board recognized the relevance of LGBTQ issues to its students. Like teenagers everywhere, many are grappling with sexual identity. Schlacks wants to make sure students hear from as many different voices as possible.
We're hoping to be able to have a Skype session with a film director later on in the year. And to make sure that the voices that are being heard in this class are not just mine, that they are the voices of the people who are a part of the LGBTQ community.
Many of those people live in San Francisco, so the students use the city as their classroom.
First, we're attending the Castro Museum, and then we're going to the new installation of the Tenderloin Museum about trans history in the Compton's cafeteria.
That's Kira Monterosa, a senior with green streaks in her hair. She's talking about the Compton's cafeteria riot. It took place in 1966 at the corner of Taylor and Turk in the Tenderloin, after police harassment of the restaurant's transgender clientele.
I think it's a really good way to recognize the history that we walk amongst every day.
Sophomore Izzy Vasquez, arms adorned with a serious collection of string bracelets, is thrilled to be learning about local events that paralleled national milestones in the fight for gay rights.
Well, and the whole Compton's cafeteria riot was so similar to what happened in Stonewall, which was the big movement. It was just really interesting to learn that San Francisco had so much history similar to the Stonewall movement. It was really cool to learn about that.
Senior Selena Wen is excited about classroom visits from longtime activists, like the former teacher who fought California's Proposition 6, which would have banned gay people from teaching in public schools.
We had, for the teachers, the bill against gay teachers, we actually had Tom...
A classmate jumps in to complete the sentence.
Tom Amiano, yeah.
He came in and talked to us about what it was like to be a teacher during the time when the bill was trying to get passed.
He was the first teacher in, I believe, the San Francisco Unified School District to come out as a gay teacher.
Amiano co-founded the No on Six campaign with Harvey Milk, San Francisco's first openly gay supervisor. Here's Milk in November 1978 announcing the measure's defeat.
A lot of people joined us and rejected Proposition 6, and now we owe them something. We owe them to continue the education campaign that took place. We must destroy the myths once and for all, shatter them.
3 weeks later, Milk was murdered in City Hall, along with San Francisco Mayor George Moscone.
And every time I walk by the Harvey Milk Civil Rights Academy, which was Douglas School when I first moved here in the early 1970s, it not only reminds me of Harvey, who I loved dearly, but also just what a wonderful symbol it is that a public grade school would be named after a gay rights hero.
Gay rights activist Cleve Jones has seen a lot of change since he arrived in San Francisco as a young man in the 70s.
When I was in school, of course, there was no such thing as a gay-straight alliance.
Jones was an aide to Harvey Milk and later created the AIDS Memorial Quilt. Today, he visits high schools all over the country, and he says that talking about homosexuality with young people no longer raises eyebrows.
I really come from the last generation of homosexual people who, as we were coming of age, did not know that there were other people like us.
Back in the classroom, students are preparing a column for San Francisco's Bay Times newspaper, where they write on issues like being a good ally. Sophomore Izzy Vasquez says the class helps students validate their own experiences.
It's hard to feel empowered when you feel alone in what's going on in, with your struggle specifically and with your friends' struggles.
And senior Kira Monterosa feels like she's in the vanguard.
I feel like it's history in the making because it's something that's never been offered, and I didn't realize, like, with all the media attention, I didn't realize how rare it was to have this opportunity.
So, when the semester ends, what grade will these students give their teacher?
Definitely an A.
More than an A.
A plus 100.
Yeah, an A. She's doing a really great job and a really great thing.
San Francisco schools have changed a lot since the controversies over homosexuals in the classroom. And perhaps the fact that these students find nothing surprising about LGBTQ studies in their school marks the biggest change of all. In San Francisco, I'm Lizak Shalit for Cross Currents.
You don't have to be a big old sports star to know the value of teamwork. You can even, you know, look like me. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
It pays to be a team player. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. And today on the Academic Minute, Stephen Whiting, assistant professor of management at Central Florida University, examines how being part of the team can lead to a bigger payday from your employer.
In the contemporary workplace, teamwork is becoming the norm rather than the exception. This raises the question, does it take a different kind of employee to achieve success in a team environment compared to an individual setting? And do managers responsible for hiring team employees consider the potential teamwork of a job candidate rather than focusing solely on their skills and abilities? We investigated these questions using data from the NFL draft. We looked at 440 players drafted over a 7-year period. First, we obtained measures of their physical prowess, metrics like speed and height, and on-the-field performance in college in the form of statistics like receptions or tackles. Then we combed through more than 26,000 newspaper articles written about the players during their college careers. We looked for instances when players engaged in a particularly team-oriented behavior called contextual performance. When a player helps a freshman learn the playbook, when they watch extra game film to help the team, or when they defend a teammate who's receiving public criticism, they are engaging in contextual performance. We found that NFL teams prefer players who engage in contextual performance, and they also pay them more. 3 media reports of contextual performance increase a player's draft stock a full position and result in a first-year salary increase of somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000. Perhaps most interestingly, we found that these reports of past contextual performance predicted future job performance. Players who were more helpful and supportive in college performed at a higher level on the field in the NFL. Thus, even in a workplace that is thought to be all about results, it seems to matter how well you play with others.
That was Stephen Whiting of Central Florida University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. And that's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Just go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledges podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of the Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.